trust nothing they say. Follow the money, make them all pay. Under a headline, over a beer, truth plainly told is what they most fear. Deadlines and dreamers someday will meet down at the dark end of Burb Street. Good morning. You're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street on KRBS 107.1 FM in Oroville, California. Our program is also heard on KQRP 106.1 FM in Salida, California, WCRB 97.1 FM in Cherry Ridge, Pennsylvania, and WYQZ 96.7, that is, FM in Bealeton, Virginia. My name is Dan Gellerty, along with my co-host,
Tom Nato.
Thanks for joining us today. We certainly appreciate you spending some time with us. Also, if Wanda is listening by any chance on Live 365, our interview from the first hour, the blogger of the Pull Dump Post, thanks for joining us. We certainly appreciate it. And we certainly appreciate you spending some time with us today. We'd also like to invite you to take a look at our blog at www.ltobs.blogspot.com, and we post almost daily there, and we have a pretty active comment section, so we encourage you to comment whether you like us, or particularly if you don't like us. You know, we have a lot of people out there that don't like us, Tom, I think, don't you?
Alberto///
Anyhow, thanks for joining us today. We really do appreciate you spending some time with us. This is our second hour today, so I think we have a few more things on our index. I think the first thing we want to talk about, and we kind of alluded to this earlier during when we were talking about the President's State of State of the Union address, about how we have such a healthy economy and a robust economy, and we're the envy of the world. And
this is the great CPI story you picked up.
And let me give you a little background reference here. As we all know, everybody's been hit really, really hard at the in our pocketbooks by the high price of gasoline. As here in California, it's back up over about $2.50. Earlier in the fall, we were in some places over $3 a gallon, definitely in the $2.90s, and it fell rather conveniently between Thanksgiving and Christmas. It didn't. It fell conveniently.
Conveniently or politically?
I think it was political, but conveniently, you know. And now they're creeping back up. They're up in the $2.50s now. And California generally has some of the highest gasoline prices in the nation. It got me to thinking, and I started looking at my PG&E bill, which is Pacific Gas and Electric. And living in Sacramento, we have just PG&E for our gas. Electricity, thankfully, is provided by a municipal utility district. And I got my bill, and I started examining it. And our gas bill was about $70. Now, mind you, we're in a fairly temperate climate. What time?
Your chair is squeaking.
Oh, my chair is squeaking. Well, we better get some WD-40 on that. Is that coming over there? Well, people know that we're in a real studio then when it's squeaking, I guess.
That's true.
That's true. Anyhow, I started looking at my PG&E bill for my gas usage. And here in Sacramento, we don't really get that cold, although it will dip down in the 30s at night. And in the past, we would turn the heater on in the morning for half an hour, 45 minutes. And our gas bills were about the same as they were last year, about $65-$70. And we use our gas primarily for drying laundry and hot water and cooking. We have not turned on the heater at all this year, not once. So I looked at our daily usage, and our daily usage last year was 2.1 therms, which is a measurement of
heat,
I guess. 2.1 therms per day, and our usage this year in the same billing cycle was 1.4 therms per day. So we cut about 33% of our consumption in gas, and yet our bill was identical, maybe just nominally higher than it was last year. So basically our gas bill went up by about 33%, I would say, roughly, wouldn't you? That's Rough snap, 33%. So I got, it made me start thinking about the consumer price index. Tom and I have talked about it, and we found some interesting information. There was one story in particular we found on the internet, and it's by a person by the name of Carrie Lynch. And it says, who says inflation isn't a problem? And let me just read a little bit from it. Let's see. Well, first of all, I guess they referenced the new Federal Reserve Chairman was also sworn in this week, Ben Bernanke, who succeeds Alan Greenspan. But let me read a little bit. The Consumer Price Index, the government's best measure of inflation, has now gone up every year since 1955. Every year. So that's 50 years anyhow, through 2005, uninterrupted growth, I guess if you could call it that. Last year, the CPI rose 3.4%, driven mostly by energy prices. In 2004, increased 3.3%, the year before, 1.9%. For every 1% the CPI goes up, the purchasing power of the dollar goes down an equivalent amount. In the last 10 years alone, the value of the dollar has fallen more than 20%. So, 10 years ago, when we were working at the Daily Recorder, you buy me a coffee, it was $1. You buy that same cup of coffee you bought me this morning was $1.50 now, Tom.
Well,
jeez, Tom.
And that was a deal.
Yeah, and that was a deal. Despite some imperfections in the long-term price comparison the Labor Department uses to compile the CPI, a middle-income family that earned $40,000 in 1995 would need to have earned $51,300 last year just to maintain its 1995 standard of living. That's the real cost of inflation. And my point in this whole discussion is, even though our consumer price index has gone up 3.4%, intuitively I strongly believe that it's much higher, because what they include in the consumer price index are large capital purchases. In other words, and this article goes on to say that, you know, your cell phone that you bought today is substantially cheaper than it was 10 years ago, let alone 20 years ago, or computers. But these are not daily purchases. These are purchases. A capital purchase implies that it's a long-term purchase. And true, the price of cell phones, the price of televisions, the price of computers have gone down substantially.
But certainly not cars.
Certain cars have certainly not gone down. Furniture has not gone down. Washers and dryers, all these sort of things haven't gone down. But even beyond those capital purchases, which have increased, is the day-to-day cost of buying energy. Our subsistence items have gone up substantially. And my whole point is, I believe this 3.4, whatever the consumer price index was last year, what did I say, 3.4%, driven mostly by energy costs. If you take out these things, like they include 400 items in the basket. And if you think about a computer, it's maybe heavily skewed, that it skews the index. My intuitively, I think inflation is probably running more about 6 or 7 or 8% a year, because these are the items that you have to buy day in, day out. And
stepping backwards a little bit and looking at the broad scheme of things, if you look back over the last 30 years, essentially, with a couple of exceptions, we're looking at a Republican or Republican-oriented administration.
Right.
And the whole gist of this, if you look at it in the abstract, is the poor pay more for less.
Right.
And the rich pay less and get more. Because they don't pay as much taxes and et cetera, et cetera.
Well, here's a few more interesting things in here, in this story, Who Says Inflation Isn't a Problem? It reads, prices seem to have increased for most services provided by government or affected by government policies, such as regulation and subsidies. Here's a real interesting one to me. College tuition and fees, for example, have increased more than 190% since 1990. 190%.
You know why that is?
What?
Fewer federal subsidies
towards
education.
Right.
So basically, parents are picking up the tab.
Right. And it really what it's doing is shutting a lot of people out from higher education is really what it's doing. And I think there's a reason to it.
I think you owe the listeners a disclaimer.
Yes. Yes, I do own. Yeah, I have three college. Well, yeah. Well, Sean's actually in graduate school. He's on his own, but I do have three children in college right now. Two of them are going to community college because, frankly, it's a lot cheaper than going to the Cal State or the University of California system for the first 2 years. Here's another interesting thing too: hospital, nursing home, and adult daycare costs, dependent on Medicare and Medicaid reimbursements, have increased about 168% since 1990. Prescription drugs and medical supplies are up 106%, in part because of costly Food and Drug Administration reviews. Well, I don't know about that.
That's partly because of lobbying.
Right. This is an interesting one. And I can understand why, but garbage and trash collection costs are up 99%. Did you realize
that? Hey, don't get me started on that. I create no trash, but I still have to pay the same rate.
You still have to pay it. But, the point of this, my whole point is, I think the cost of living is much higher than the government is leading us to believe. Well, and all you have to do is just go to the grocery store and have a little bit of a memory of the way things, you know, prices were 5 years ago compared to what you were making five years ago.
It's the items they measure and the terms in which they measure them. You know, when they say, I think that the CPI was devised many years ago.
Right.
And so they go and they follow that same rule. So they find out, let's see, has the cost on a 50-pound bag of rice gone up? Why?
Right.
No. Not much.
Not much, you know, but it's heavily subsidized, though, too, you know. Right, you know. So
then again, they don't measure the fact that you used to be able to get water for relatively free
right
from your tap, but now it tastes so bad you buy the bottles for $1.25, $1.08, you know.
What a scheme. Anyhow, that's all we have to say on that. But, you know, this is my little bone to pick today because the prices of energy, I can tell you from having several kids, the price of food has gone up substantially. It really has gone up.
I can't imagine. I, you know, get few things at the grocery store. I live alone, you know, that sort of thing. And even I noticed that things go for a can of chili, right? It used to be like 88 or 98. It's like $1.89.
I know.
Not like in a period of time, but since the last time I went to the store.
Right. I think the books are being cooked on this, I guess, is really what I'm getting at. The books on the Consumer Price Index are being cooked. And, you know, I'm going to keep an eye on this. I'm going to try posting more on our blog about this.
A little sidebar on that.
Yep.
I think in California there's a chain, begins with an A, but I won't mention it, that purchased another chain that was
L,
right? And so all of a sudden the prices went up. Now we're hearing that the A intends to go out of business. I think prices went up there to just get as much as they could before they got out.
Yeah, it could be. Anyhow, let's move on, Tom, shall we? We beat this dead horse. Let's beat another dead horse. Better not say that about this next topic, actually. What we want to talk about is controversy arising from the publication of a cartoon in a Danish newspaper.
That's a thorny one. It is
a very difficult question. It's a very difficult situation. Let me just read a little bit about it to our listeners so they have a reference.
What we're talking about.
This story is from the New York Times, and it's U.S. says it also finds cartoons of Muhammad offensive. The Muslim world erupted into anger on Friday over caricatures of the Prophet Muhammad published in Europe while the Bush administration offered the protesters support, saying of the cartoons, "We find them offensive, and we certainly understand why Muslims would find these images offensive." Streets in the Palestinian region in Egypt, Turkey, Pakistan, Iraq, Iran, Indonesia, and Malaysia were filled with demonstrators calling for the boycott of European goods and burning the flag of Denmark, where the cartoons first appeared. Yeah, I got this. This has a little side note. That's the first time I've ever heard of anybody burning the Danish flag. You know, they burned the American flag all over the world. What have they ever done except for giving us Danishes, you know?
Yeah, I thought Danishes you burn were in the oven and you were trying to make them.
That sentence is kind of funny. Anyhow, the Danish newspaper published it, and many Muslims consider it blasphemy print any image of Muhammad, the founder of Islam, let alone a cartoon that ridicules him. The set of a dozen cartoons has outraged Muslims as being provocative and anti-Muslim, while many Europeans have, and this is where the real controversy, had defended their publication under the right to free speech. So It's a very delicate issue.
Well, you know, the first of all, does provocative mean I don't like it?
Yeah, they don't like it.
Right.
They don't like it, you know.
You know, and that's where it becomes thorny, is that you want to give everybody an opportunity to have their say, but it really bothers me where one group says, we believe in freedom, freedom of speech is my right to tell you what not to print.
Right. You know, this is where I come down on this. You know, certainly if you're publishing a newspaper or any news media, you don't want to, you know, on one hand, you don't really want to purposely offend people, but with the freedom of expression, sometimes you do. With freedom of the press, freedom of expression, that is your right. And if you live, you know, I hate saying this because it doesn't come out right, but if you live in a society where there's free speech and free expression, where you can practice your religion freely, you have to be also prepared to accept criticism of your religion. So,
by the way, I want to step in here for a moment of fairness.
Yes.
In the community where I live, there are two churches of Islam faith.
Right.
Churches of mosques, really. Yeah. But anyway, nothing of this sort has ever come out of them. They're an integral part of the community, and you would never hear this sort of thing. And I've been thinking about going back and talking to them and seeing what they think of this for a story for them.
Well, that might be an interesting story because, you know, as I was saying, you don't certainly, you know, you want to be sensitive to, you know, people's thoughts and everything. But you have to, with that, you know, freedom of expression comes the responsibility is the right word, but you have to be prepared to, you know, take heat too. You know,
well, you know, this isn't just limited to Islamicists. Muslims. They are Muslims. The cartoonist Toll just got in trouble for showing a guy with no arms and legs in a bed, and Rumsfeld telling him that, we'll call it battle hardened.
Right.
Yeah. And so all the generals and admirals, I guess, in the Pentagon, and the fill me in, I'm losing the word for
Pentagon.
Pentagon, we'll settle for it. Anyway,
Department of Defense?
No, there's a special agency, board. But anyway, I've written to him, say, can't do that. We object to that. Well, you know, it's really hard for us to sit here and say, you should be more fair over there when we plan not to be more fair here. We're planning to get less fair here. It's really getting screwy out there.
Right. You know, this is where I kind of come down on it, is this really should be a kind of a warning for Americans, in so much that, you know, we talk about blending government with religion and kind of a creeping theocracy, because that's really what we're headed, where we're in is a creeping theocracy of sorts, that, you know, this is going to happen someday in the United States, is that if we continue down this path, this is just shows what can happen when you have a group of people that are in control that do not like criticism of their religion.
If certain people became the controlling power in government, it would become a government and a nation of exclusion, not inclusion.
Right. You know, the other thing, just as an interesting side note to this, I read a story the other day, and it's about the IRS going after certain churches for preaching politics from the pulpit. And, you know,
but they're not their brand of politics.
Exactly. Well, what I found really interesting was they had some guy, a minister of a large evangelical church in Colorado Springs, 11,000 members, big church. And he is saying, well, and the controversy is around a Episcopalian church in Pasadena who's being investigated by the IRS for criticizing George Bush prior to the 2004 election. They didn't explicitly endorse John Kerry, but they criticized Bush. Somebody complained, so the IRS is investigating them. And the minister in Colorado Springs, who's a conservative, and he freely admits to it, says, well, I'll fight for their right to, you know, say whatever they want. And you know what? I think there comes a point where, you know, religious institutions, they have the right to preach whatever they want and take whatever political beliefs they have. That's their right. But where I draw the line is their tax-free, you know, their exemption from federal income taxes. Is if they're going to start preaching politics, that's certainly their right to do it, but they should not have the tax-exempt status, because a tax-exempt status saves them a ton of money. They don't have to pay property taxes. They don't have to pay income taxes. They're tax-free. So, and anyhow, that's kind of where I am on that.
Is that horse dead yet?
That horse is dead. That horse is dead. So, okay. What? Just a reminder, listeners, you're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street. We're heard every other Saturday on KRBS 107.1 FM in Oroville, California. We're heard live from 9 to 11, and we're heard on tape delay on several other stations, which includes KQRP in Salida, California, WCRV in Cherry Ridge, Pennsylvania, and WYQZ, our newest affiliate, I guess you could say, in Bealeton, Virginia. So we'd like to thank you for joining us. Tom?
There's one thing. We had that email that was also touching on the subject of religion that I've lost over here about the TSA, the Transportation Security Agency or whatever.
What?
Stopping our sometime guest, Bob Ulanowicz.
Well, yeah, I think you can tell the story. You can wing it.
I got it from him.
Uh-huh.
But essentially, a priest going through. There we go.
Ask and ye shall receive.
Okay, this is like precious, as they might say.
Yeah, Bob is an old friend of Tom, and he's a frequent guest on this. He's a scientist, basically.
And
wait a second, does Bob wear a lab coat and smoke a pipe?
No, he's more of he's an ecologist.
Okay.
But anyway, he's saying, Tom, I thought you might enjoy this following story, which I heard. Our pastor, he's a churchgoer in Catholic Church.
Yes.
Says our pastor, Peter Daly, was traveling to Mississippi, dressed in civvies, to help out with the rebuilding efforts there. On the flight, had to pass through security. The security agent thumbed through his breviary.
May I interrupt? Just one second. As you described it, this is an Irish Catholic priest, too.
He gets to that.
Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And asked what it was all about. Daly replied that it was a book of Christian prayer that he said daily. The agent replied, this is Catholic. That's not Christian. Daly went ballistic.
he was in his civvies, too. So.
He has a hair trigger Irish temper.
No, we don't.
And so they immediately threw him into the clink and kept him in detention overnight. Now, that's what when you become a religious society.
Yeah, right. You know, so this guy's a priest. You know, you think they
not
probably...
not the right kind of priest.
This is Catholic. It's not Christian. You know, that's incredible. I mean, you think it would have done him any good if he had his collar on? You think they would have hassled him still?
Well, if they confused him with an Episcopal, maybe.
Right. No, then they would just take his tax status away.
To be more like Baptist oriented.
Yeah, right? Tax exempt status away. Well, we're going to take a short break. You're listening again, as I said, to Left Turn on Bird Street. We're heard every other Saturday from 9 until 11 a.m. on KRBS. And we thank you for joining us. We'd also like you to take a look at our blog at www.ltobs.com. blogspot.com. And Tom, what track was it that you recommended?
15.
So let's cue the 15.
One of my favorites here.
And after this short interlude, we'll be back for our last segment.
Drinking champagne. Got white skin, got assassin's eyes. I'm looking up into the sapphire tinted skies. I'm wild dressed, waiting on the last train. Standing on the gallows with my head in the news. Any minute now I'm expecting all hell. People are crazy and times are strange. I'm locked in tight, I'm out of range. I used to care, but things have changed.
This place ain't doing me any good. I'm in the wrong town, I should be in Hollywood. Just for a second now, I thought I saw something move. Gonna take dancing lessons, do the jitterbug rag. Ain't no shortcuts, gonna dress in drag. Only a fool here would think you've got anything to prove. Lot of water under the bridge, lot of other stuff too. Don't get up, gentlemen, I'm only passing through. People are crazy, times are strange. I'm locked in tight, I'm out of range. I used to care, but things have changed. I've been walking 40 miles, a bad road. If the Bible is right, the world will explode. I've been trying to get as far away from myself as I can. Some things are too hard to touch. The human mind can only stand so much. You can't win with the losing hand. Feel like falling in love with the first woman I meet. Putting her in a wheelbarrow and wheeling her down the street. People are crazy, times are strange. I'm locked in tight, I'm out of range. I used to care, but things have changed. I just don't show it. You can hurt someone and not even know it. The next 60 seconds could be like an eternity. Gonna get low down, gonna fly high. All the truth in the world adds up to one big lie. I'm in love with a woman that don't even appeal to me. Mr. Jinx and Miss Lucy, they jumped in the lake. I'm not that eager to make a mistake. People are crazy, times are strange. I'm locked inside, I'm out of range. I used to care, but things have changed.
You're listening to KRBS 107.1 FM in Oroville, California. Thanks for joining us today. You're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street, and we're heard every other Saturday from 9 until 11 a.m. Thanks for joining us, and we also like to invite you to take a look at our blog, which is on the internets at www.ltobs.blogspot.com, and take a look at our internet and participate in our comment section, and we update it almost daily, sometimes more than once a day, don't we, Tom?
That's the days we're lolling around the house.
In our underwear doing
do
nothing.
I can do that, but not you.
Yeah.
If there's any lolling going on in your house, it's done in the yard pushing a mower.
Yeah, you got that right. Anyhow, thanks for joining us today. We really appreciate it. We'll play this. I just need this for the outgo. What else do we have on the agenda? Let's see. If we're going to stick to our agenda, we want to talk about, we talked about the consumer price index. We talked about the cartoons of Muhammad that offended a lot of people.
There's always that burning issue of infertility.
Oh,
in the
Age. Yeah, go for it, Tom. That's a good story.
You know, this thing is amazing on a couple of things because of the details that people get involved in. This is from the BBC News, and you may not recall this because it happened in 1991. The melting ice revealed a corpse that had been frozen stiff for many a couple thousand years maybe. They named him, the person they found, still clothed, still there, was still fairly visible as he fell down, Oetsi, the prehistoric man. He was frozen in a glacier for 5,300 years.
Woo!
That ice lasts a long time.
Well, you know, just as a little side note, that is interesting because that shows global warming. The glaciers are retreating. But go on with your story, Tom.
Well, anyway, so, but this is the important part as far as some scientists are concerned. Genetic research has established that he could have been infertile. This is sort of the thing you want to rush out and check. Well, let's see. His arms are still there. So, what about down there? You know,
How's this plumbing working there?
Genetic research published in the American Journal of Physical Anthropology also confirms that his roots probably lie in Central Europe. Oetsi's body was found in the melting ice of the, prepare yourself for this, Schnalzal. I said it right, I think. A glacier in the
isn't that
Alps.
Wait a second, isn't that some kind of dirty Yiddish word or something?
Could be.
Go ahead.
Anyway, he was in the Italian Alps and found in 1991. Examination of his remains has already revealed the Copper Age, also sometimes known as the Bronze Age. A man almost certainly died as a result of a fight. Now, listen to this. The assessment is based on the presence of an arrowhead that was lodged in his back. That's not a fight.
That's an ambush.
Exactly. All right. And extensive cuts to his hands, you know. He fought for a while and ran away, and they
what was it, a guy in Abu Ghraib or something like that?
Sounds like. The scientists behind the latest genetic research now speculate that Oetsi's possible sterility, this is the important part, could have been a factor that led to his violent end. How they concluded that, I don't know.
You know, who cares? I mean, what is... Who cares?
No cancer. We've got to, like, populate.
Yeah.
The scientists based the research now speculate that Oetsi's possible sterility could have been a factor and that it was caused by a flaw, I guess, in stretches of his DNA. DNA that they took from cells in the Iceman's intestines and then examined. In particularly, they looked at the genetic material contained in the mitochondria, tiny structures that provide power to cells. This type of DNA is passed only down the maternal line. Well, you know, if he has that and is passed down to the mother line, how could he be infertile if they weren't?
And you know what? Who really cares?
Exactly. Anyway, but so there's a picture that comes along with this, and I swear he looks like the felon that moved in down the street from me.
The question is, does he or does he not have a mullet?
Or could he not have been Ringo Starr a few years ago?
Let me see that. Nah, yeah, hey, he's got a pretty nice mullet, too, you know? I don't know. Who cares? But you know,
this
Tom?
This is what they imagine. Now, I can see them getting maybe, you know, the facial structure. But the mustache and the long hair and exactly how long it was.
Now, this is a great segue. Now, you know what this reminds me of? And this will lead you to the topic after next. But a little segue in between here. Do you remember, he just recently passed away in the last month or two. One of the Wisconsin, not the one you want to talk about, one of the Wisconsin senators, William Proxmire.
Oh.
Remember him? Yeah. And he had, what was it called? I think the Golden Fleece Award every week.
Oh, yes.
He you know, in the 60s and 70s, he came out with the Golden Fleece Award, and it was basically things like this that people are paid money to research. Maybe some of it had some purpose, who knows what, but somebody was paid. Somebody's money was used to figure out whether the Iceman could bear children or not. You know, so Proxmire back in the 70s would have these weekly Golden Fleece Awards, and that was basically how taxpayers were fleeced out of the money.
I think Huntley and Brinkley used it as a closer for their new show.
I think you're right. It seems to me, I remember seeing it on TV, and Proxmire was, he was a pretty interesting guy, which brings up another Wisconsin senator who recently passed away. I think he passed away in December.
Minnesota.
No.
You're talking about
Eugene McCarthy.
Yeah, I think his name is Minnesota.
Proxmire?
Michigan. Yeah, right. I don't know. I just like the quotes they had about him.
No, Eugene McCarthy is from Wisconsin.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah.
Well, Tom. I should read these things more closely. Did we talk about the Upper Peninsula? I'm getting my peninsulas mixed up.
See, Tom, this... Stop.
I once mentioned Wisconsin to Gene, and I received a return the unpremeditated bias of populist and Nordic Minnesota towards its German neighbor. Oh, they're just a bunch of socialists over there. But anyway, so I'm not reading correctly.
Gene McCarthy was from Wisconsin.
I've never been to either one of these states, so that may happen.
Well, you don't know what you're missing until you go to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and you go up north in Michigan.
Well, Fargo made me want to go there, yes.
Yes, yes. Anyhow, why don't you read a few of these quotes from Eugene McCarthy?
Well, I'm going to pick out a couple, but Gene visited Maine once.
Mm-hmm.
How'd you like it? I, meaning Sam Smith, the guy who wrote this, Smith asked him, how'd you like it? And he said, well, it seems that all the women look like men there. And I got real interested in these places called Redemption Center until I found out they were just for old soda bottles.
No, read this another one. That's pretty funny. That's good stuff there.
Let's see. Someone asked what Gene would do if he were to become Pope. He replied that he would cut the Ten Commandments down to four and reorder them.
Well, you know,
very
funny.
Intelligent guy. You know, I was in Washington and at about the time he was doing that running,
uh-huh.
And I never had anything to do with his particular campaign directly. I'd helped some people that did, but uh-huh. But my favorite of his, he liked principles you could follow. An old congressman, he said, and told him, I think it was Brad Spencer, he said,
uh-huh.
Told him, I'll tell you, young men, you may make a mistake once in a while, but vote against anything and everything that starts with re. He said, vote against all reorganizations, vote against all recodifications.
Reform.
Vote against all resolutions. They hadn't started to reinvent government then, but he would have said, vote against all reinventions. And he said, vote against all Republicans.
Oh,
that was the
good.
Last word and a rather good bit of advice.
Well, you know, the funny thing about, and I've read this in several different sources through the years, and I think most people who are aware of history realize that in 1968, Eugene McCarthy ran for the Democratic nomination against Lyndon LBJ, who was the sitting president. And in New Hampshire, he upset Johnson in the New Hampshire primary.
This is
interesting, that was a big deal. Yeah, it was a big deal. And they had a name for McCarthy's young organizers, Gene's Kids, or I don't know. I can't remember. What was it, Tom? Do you remember?
Let's see. Yeah, the Gene's Means of Winning?
Something like that. I can't remember. In any case, it was a major upset, you know. And subsequent to that, about 3 or 4 weeks later, LBJ gave a national address, and he dropped a bombshell at the end of his speech saying that he would not seek the nomination. So basically, Eugene McCarthy chased LBJ out of the 1968 presidential election. McCarthy ultimately didn't win the nomination. But in some historical research, a number of years afterwards, a few people were doing some research for, I guess, a dissertation, and they found that a lot of people voted for Eugene McCarthy, who was from Wisconsin, because they thought he was yet another Wisconsin senator by the name of Joseph McCarthy. You know? So McCarthy, it's funny how they had the same last name. One's liberal, one's a really conservative.
They're all the same.
And they thought they were voting for Joseph McCarthy. So that's what chased LBJ from the Democratic nomination in 1968.
To think he might have been put in office because everybody voted for him by mistake.
I know. I always thought that was kind of funny. Yeah. Anyhow, so, you know, there's another story, getting a little bit more serious here, I want to cover in our last, one of the last segments. It's sad, it's funny, it works on several different levels. It's about Iraq. And, you know, we've mentioned on this show in the last few years, and it's been out there in the world of the internet and blogs, but the mainstream media really hasn't given it much attention. And since our occupation of Iraq, there's some, you know, by some accounts, $8 billion missing dollars. $8 billion, not million.
$8 billion?
$8 billion. Literally, you know, I read that they actually flew C-17s over there with pallets full of $20 bills, chock full of money. And alas,
destination unknown.
Unknown. Well, we now know where some of it went. And this is a story from the New York Times. Former U.S. official in Iraq to plead guilty to corruption. I'm shocked. Shocked. There's corruption going on here. I'm shocked. Anyhow, let me read a little bit. A former American occupation official in Iraq is expected to plead guilty to bribery, conspiracy, money laundering, and other charges in federal court on Thursday. This is a couple days ago. For his actions in a scheme. I like that word, scheme. To use sexual to use sexual favors, jewelry, and millions of dollars in cash to steer construction work to a corrupt contractor, according to papers filed with the court. The official, Robert J. Stein Jr., served as a controller and funding officer in 2003 and 2004 for the Coalition Provisional Authority, which governed Iraq after the American-led invasion. Four Americans, including Mr. Stein and the contractor, Philip H. Bloom.
I want to interrupt here.
Yes.
Stein and Bloom. Doesn't that sound like a James Joyce novel?
Yeah, it does. really. Stein and Bloom, a law firm, perhaps.
Yeah, right.
A white shoe Philadelphia law firm. Have been arrested in the case. Mr. Stein's plea, apparently with the understanding that he will cooperate with the prosecutors.
It is to say, rat out everybody else.
Right, is the first to be made public. The court papers depict a sordid exercise in greeting corruption that has spread much more widely than previously known, including the four people already arrested. The papers indicate that a minimum of three other still unnamed co-conspirators also played a role in the scheme. In order to give more than $8 million in contracts and millions more in stolen cash from Mr. Bloom, the papers say the conspirators accepted bribes, valuable goods, and other favors. Basically, it goes on and on and on.
It goes three as yet unnamed.
Three, they name them like eight.
Those are unlikely to be generals who are given time to get their story straight.
Yeah, read the next paragraph.
Where were they?
It's right here. A couple lieutenant colonels.
Two of the Americans already arrested, Lieutenant Colonel Deborah Harrison and Lieutenant Colonel Michael Wheeler. It never goes up to general.
They stop them at the lieutenant.
Our senior Army colonels. Reserve officers. It never goes to the regular Army.
Right.
Always into the reserves. The court papers indicate that the remaining unnamed co-conspirators are also Army Reserve officers, for a total of at least five officers involved. But the papers suggest that others, identified only by opaque designations like Person H, may also have been involved in one way or another.
And what's the old saying, Tom? Is it art imitates life or life imitates art or whatever it is? I guess in this case, art imitates... Well, in any case, you ever seen... There's two movies. They're pretty good movies. They're both war movies. They're both about war profiteering, and they're both comedies on certain levels. Did you ever see Kelly's Heroes?
Yes.
Great movie. And Three Kings, about the war in Iraq. Yeah, I mean, basically, this is what's going on. You read this whole story.
Don't forget Milo Minderbinder in Catch-22.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. So, I mean, here we go. There's $8 billion. So we've accounted for, you know, by all told, you know, I'm just adding them up quickly, about $10 million of it. So that leaves...
Well, when they impeach Bush, are they going to impeach...
Tom.
Are they going to impeach Person B?
Right. So they had $8 billion missing... billion here, a billion there. Pretty soon you're talking some serious money. But we got 10 million of it accounted for. I mean, just looking at these numbers here, 10 million of it accounted for.
That was the tip. They left it on the bar.
Right. So that leaves let's see if I get my math right, 7 billion, 990 million unaccounted for.
92.
Thank you. Did I say 8? Oh, okay. Did I say 8 million? But anyhow.
Oh, was it 10 million or 8 million?
I said 10 million.
Oh, 10 million, yeah, 90.
Yeah, so. But we found some of it. Some of it's been found. The other,
Yep. Is the reserve officers were people that had real jobs at home.
Yep.
And they were called into service.
Yep, of course.
While we're here, we're going to get it.
Hey, why not? You know, take some home, you know, get that new Cadillac, get the house remodeled,
That's a good point. Maybe they were used car salesmen.
They probably were. Who's to say anymore? But, well, it'll be interesting to see if anything else happens like to this, but I suspect this is probably going to be the last we're going to hear of this, and the other $7.9 billion is going to not be accounted for. So,
well, you know the Abu Ghraib thing?
Yeah.
They prosecuted people all the way up to sergeant.
Yeah, I know. Boy, so they push that high up the chain of command there. Yeah, well, at least on this, they got a couple lieutenant colonels reserved, like you said, and one of them is a lady. So, I mean, they're spreading equality in their prosecution equally between men and women. You know, there's no gender disparity there. At least we can say that. But I don't know. You know, we got $8 billion over here, and we're getting screwed on our energy costs. You know, Tom, is the bar open? Can we go to the bar after the show here, have a few belts? Still morning. Well, it's noon someplace, isn't it?
Well, you know, in nicer places than Oroville, the bars open at 6 o'clock in the morning. But no, I don't think anything. Well, it's 11 o'clock.
It's 11.
This is the pre-noontime bib.
That's true. It's true. It's, you know, well, that's for shift workers. You know, just, you know, when I used to, in the summertime, when I was up in my youth in Detroit, I'd worked a couple summers midnight shift. And we'd get off at 7 o'clock in the morning, go have a beer at 7:30. You know, it's not uncommon.
You know, when we're working the paper down in Sacramento.
Yep.
And even before that, when I was in some politics, there's a Italian restaurant out towards the Sacramento port.
Uh-huh.
And you could go in there at 6 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, and the longshoremen were already in there coming off shift.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. You know, it was, well, you know, it's no different than getting off at 3:30 in the afternoon and go having a beer. You know, you go and have a couple beers, go home.
And the next question is, what was I doing in there?
Yeah, that's right. What were you doing in there, Tom?
I was just serving papers or something.
Investigative purposes only.
Well, I think it just came up in the context of a conversation.
Yeah, right. Well, we're getting near the end of our hour here. I'd like to remind our listeners that our program is also heard on KQRP 106.1 FM in Salida, California, WCRV 97.1 FM in Cherry Ridge, Pennsylvania. And our newest station that's playing left turn on Bird Street is WYQZ. And it's hard to say that, WYQZ. Those are tough call letters at 96.7 FM in Bealeton, Virginia. And you'll be hearing us on a delay. But thank you for listening to us. We certainly appreciate it. We also invite you to take a look at our blog. It's located on the internets at www.ltobs.blogspot.com. And also thanks to KRBS for putting this show and all the other fine programming on KRBS on the internet versus via live365.com. So thanks for listening to us. Tom, you have any closing thoughts for us this morning?
Well, yes, I do. But first I want to point out is that now that we're in this new time slot,
yes,
we go right to the hour.
Well, I know, but we got to play a little bit of music so Marianne can come in here and get herself set up, you know.
Okay. Well, then, closing out, I'd like to say so long to Booth Bay Harbor and wish them a safe trip to Guatemala, if there is such a thing. And I know there is such a thing as Guatemala, but I don't know if there's such a thing as a safe trip there. This is Left Turn on Bird Street. All parts except those we shamelessly crib from other people are copyright.
Copyright
2006 by Dan Gowardy and Tom Nato.
Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you in a couple weeks.
Thank you.